Welcome to today's episode of Games UX. Today we're going to be talking about PCs and consoles and maybe other stuff. We've got a bunch of co-hosts today, and they are...
Yeah, I'm Clay Hauser. I've known Charlie from multiple games on PlayStation. I work at Bank of America. I love hardcore gaming. I don't own a Switch, and I kind of want to buy one.
Yeah, hi, my name's Brandon Houlihan. I am the design manager at Ticketmaster Mobile Studio. I know Charlie from Bumpers. I listen to his Bread Time podcast there. I also do a podcast called Dank Tank, which is my ridiculous product ideas.
Which is a great podcast.
I'm Sam Sovis. I'm a freelance iOS developer. Working on a bunch of different stuff. I guess I know Charlie through the internet.
But we've met in real life many times as well.
Yes. Yes.
Hi, I'm Keon. I'm a designer at Facebook. I've known Charlie for maybe 3 weeks. He spoke at an event when I started at Facebook, and I was just like, you're really cool. Your articles about games are really cool. And he was like, hey, you want to talk on this podcast? And here I am.
Okay, let's talk about games. So I want to start this episode by saying how we got started in games, whether it was with a PC or with some sort of dedicated system. Like, how did you guys get started in games? What was the first sort of experiences you had?
I'd say my very first experience with gaming was the Nintendo system, and I bought Legend of Zelda, and it was the gold cartridge, and it was awesome. And I remember playing it when I was a little kid, and it was just mind-blowing how amazing that game was, and Nintendo system in general. But there was always, you know, interesting feels about, you know, blowing on the cartridge, figuring out how you can turn the power on and get it to work, and sometimes it doesn't work, you gotta reset. But that was my first experience with getting into games, but I didn't really become super obsessed with games, I think, until I got my first PC game, which was StarCraft.
My thing was kind of opposite. I started on a PC. I had a Commodore 64 as a very young child, and I like experienced some games on the PC, but I don't think I thought I was actually like into games or like a gamer of any sort until I got like a Nintendo. When I got like the 8-bit Nintendo, then I realized, oh, this is like something I like, and this is something that's like part of my life now.
Yeah, I also got started on console like Clay. I feel similar too, because I liked playing games, but I didn't really get into them until I started playing them on PC, and mostly because it gave me the opportunity to like play with other people, and mm-hmm. That just opened up this whole like other weird world of like subcultures and shit like that kind of formed around the games. And I think that's kind of what has kept me around gaming and like really got me into it. So I started with console, but I think PC is what really like got me into it. But now I'm like old and tired, so now I'm back on Xbox, and I can kind of do both. I can kind of just chill and play, but also do it with other people, which is cool.
I think I had a pretty similar experience myself. My first real experience with video games was I had a bunch of older cousins who are like 10 or 12 years older than me, and they always had like every single console growing up. And I remember like as early as 2 or 3, they had like the Sega Master System and the Genesis and like the Saturn. And so we used to just spend hours playing Aladdin or like Sonic. And when I was 4 or 5, you know, they already had the NES, but then it was like around my 4th or 5th birthday that the Super Nintendo came out, and they like all pitched together their like birthday money to buy me one, because I was the youngest cousin at the time. And that was super cool. And they all bought me like Super Mario All-Stars, and we used to just like play those games all together. And that was like my earliest memory of games, is something you like play in a room all together. And it wasn't until I got like my first PC that it became this kind of isolated activity that I would play alone. And not until I bought like Warcraft 3 when I started playing online with like strangers. And that was a completely wild thing. Warcraft 3 was the first game I ever bought myself, and I immediately hated online gaming.
I never really had like consoles or like even that many friends with consoles or a PC good enough to run any games. But I remember like as a older, not like that old, I guess, but I was like saved up all my money and spent like $20 on Bunkerland and bought a Sega Genesis, like way after Genesis was cool, and like bought a bunch of games because it was really cheap and no one wanted Genesis anymore. And playing a whole bunch, like kind of discovering video games kind of late, I guess. Oh, this is pretty great. Lion King on Genesis is so frustrating. You know, like I'm going to spend my whole day on this kind of thing. You know, it was good.
Nice. Anybody else play Echo the Dolphin on Sega Genesis?
Let's not talk about that.
Understood that game.
I missed that game.
I was so bad at that game.
Classic.
I think one of my earliest memories, though, by talking with you guys about it, was Super Smash.
Oh, yeah.
And the epic battles that would pursue in my basement with my four friends, and the screaming wars would happen when we get down to two people, and it's always the two best people. And it's just a battle royale of flying controllers.
God forbid, like, your controller popped out in the middle of, like, that epic last minute.
Yeah, then the screaming happens.
I think something I heard in there, which is kind of interesting, is, like, at least for our sorts of generations, as we came into gaming, our, like, console use was pretty much, like, not connected. But, like, I think PC gaming was connected way before. I think I had my first, like, social, like, gaming where I was gaming at my house and someone else was playing me from another house, like, on PC. It was actually Doom. It was like we used like a modem to modem connection and played Doom, like, me and one friend, which was the geekiest thing, I swear. Yeah, there's something I think to PC that stays more social to this day.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Yeah, I agree as well.
I think I would disagree.
I'm listening.
If only because I think more recently console gaming has become this more, like, isolated thing. Like, you'll sit on your couch and play FIFA with strangers across the world, or Rocket League or something like that. But, like, at least my memory of video games, like, consoles were always played on a big TV with, like, four people on a couch. And it was almost more inviting to have a bunch of people playing together on one game. Like, you play Mario Party and your N64 had, like, four controller slots. So you were always thinking, like, how can I fill these empty controller slots? Or otherwise the computer would play against you. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was always the experience. And it wasn't until, like, much later that I thought PC gaming became a lot more social. And I think it's only, like, recently started switching. And I think the Switch is probably the first of the more, like, contemporary consoles where we're returning to social multiplayer games being localized and not over the internet. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, the Nintendo 64, like, I remember that as being, like, the social gaming console, right? Like, they had four controllers, like, plugs by, like, default. And I remember, just maybe it was because I was, like, in college at that time or whatever, but it was like four people sitting around playing GoldenEye was, like, necessary. Like, that was, like, a lifestyle.
I do also have memories of LAN parties with Xbox. And in college, everybody would have an Xbox. So we'd all band together, bring a bunch of TVs, you know, spend 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours just gaming, and see who was the best person in the building.
One thing I think the console protects you from in, like, social online gaming, though, is, like, as much interaction with strangers on PC. Games like World of Warcraft or whatever, like, brought people together who were strangers a lot more than, like, console games, like, especially, like, Nintendo, right? Where, like, Nintendo locks you out from anyone you don't know, essentially. Yeah. Contemporary games aren't like that as much.
I think there's a cool nuance to that too, because I used to play this FPS on the PC called America's Army, and it was, like, just because it was free, me and my cousin used to play this game, and it had this, like, massive community of people playing together and forming guilds, and it was probably right around the same time as World of Warcraft. And I remember being kind of blown away by the fact that we had things like TeamSpeak or Ventrilo, and, like, you know, people banked on the fact that you could do multiple things at once on your PC. And so you'd have, like, chat things open, you'd have, like, AIM open, you'd be, like, looking things up while the next game was preparing. And, like, that whole aspect of it made it so much more interesting in a lot of ways than just, like, sitting at your console and dedicating your full attention sometimes to a video game.
Yeah, and that, like, aspect of it just keeps expanding too, right? Like, now you can have that chat going and run into people just, like, in an open PvP zone. Yeah. And you can also have, like, Twitch going at the same time.
Exactly.
So you could be, that's, like, crazy, interacting with people who are watching you. And it just, like, the social part of it just keeps ballooning and it just keeps getting more involved. It's really cool.
Yeah, I love right now in the world when you watch a Twitch streamer and they're, like, heavily involved in a game, listening to music, interacting with the people who are watching their Twitch stream, and then, like, sometimes even interacting with other people in real life, like, that level of, like, immersion is it's, like, surprising that it works still, like, and the human doesn't break down in those circumstances.
Have you guys experienced Amino on Twitch?
No, what is that?
It's, like, this weird phenomenon where, like, Twitch chat starts spamming this word Amino, which it's a reference to this video, which is, like, this choir ballad epic, like, music video. just look it up. Like, it's totally ridiculous, but like Twitch chat gets going with it, and then like the person will put they'll put on the video, and the song is just completely like ridiculous. And it's like kind of like this weird just like mob crowd thing that like gets the streamer to do something. It's interesting.
Okay, I'm gonna take it to really specific level. I want to talk about like inputs and outputs before we start to get too high level. So like I want to like figure out the differences of why people use the things they do on PC and console and why these two things are still different. Because you have things like the Xbox One X, which got introduced today, which you could argue is like a computer, but it's not. And we're going to like figure out why. So keyboard and mouse. This is like primarily like a PC sort of input method. This was not built for gaming at all. This was like a basic input for the way people used computers in a like sort of office space way. How does it work for gaming? Like, why does this work?
There was one thing that I was just like sketching down some notes, and one thing really struck me that I never really pay attention to. And I think that a keyboard and mouse is really cool if only for people who aren't like, you know, typically abled and have like full use of their fingers and hands and motor skills. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you can just like rearrange the configuration for a video game or like map controls to completely arbitrary inputs is really pretty cool. Like, that's the one thing that I think we gloss over all the time, but to me is like really fascinating.
Yeah, I think the customization of the keyboard is amazing. I think the thing that shocks me is that, you know, you have to learn different controls on a keyboard for every single game. Like, imagine learning like Final Cut Pro's quick keys. Like, that's kind of like a hard task, but every game kind of demands that of you with a keyboard. So I think like the barrier to entry for gaming on a PC is probably like way higher, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's a little bit more intimidating on a PC. And if you're switching around from games to games, like if you're going to an MMO, there's hundreds of keys that you could use. And you could, you know, you can have a mouse where you can short key everything to that. And just, it gets complicated really quick.
Most of my gaming has been on consoles. I haven't had like a real gaming computer until like just January. So personally, I really dislike the keyboard and mouse. I feel like I'm not as like good at aiming with a mouse as I am like thumbsticks. And then there's like so many keys, you know, it's like it kind of reminds me of playing like Super Smash Bros. When I didn't have, I've never owned an NES or N64, so like I never knew all the combinations. So I was like, everyone just destroys me because I can't remember all the things because I don't practice it. And I feel like it's that for like every PC game, like especially if it's like some like multiplayer shooter or something. It's like, well, I'm gonna get destroyed constantly because, you know, I don't know all of the shortcuts. And I feel like on Xbox you have a much better chance because especially like loading screens or something always shows you like, here's what all the buttons do, and you're like, all right, I'll remember that for this next one, and I'm gonna, you know, throw a grenade this time for the first time. Or like, it's much more approachable, I feel like.
Yeah, the thing that gets me the most is when I get flustered and on a controller I start mashing and somehow I come out okay, or like relatively so. If I get flustered ever on a keyboard using a PC game and I have to like look down or something, or see like I've lost my key position with my hand or something, like those moments are way terrifying. Okay, the other thing that the keyboard does is it allows you to type while you play. So this is like an additional communication method. I have a hypothesis. This is like the difference in PC gaming culture to console gaming culture, because it is extremely easy to trash talk while I'm playing any game on PC.
I would agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think voice interaction is actually more of a part of that toxic culture. And I remember as early as like the original Xbox, you just log into like MotoGP and you just have someone yelling at you that like, you are a faggot, you are like a skinny bitch, and like all this shit. And like, I was like 12 years old. And as a 12-year-old, you take that shit really personally. So I'd be like, no, you are a fucking bitch. Whereas I think like, you know, typing out on a keyboard, at least for me, like I grew up on the internet, and on the internet there's always been that like toxic culture, like mm-hmm. everywhere you go it's always embedded somewhere and you just have to look for it. And I think that just naturally propagated to video games too, because if you're playing a game on the internet, you're gonna take those like same internet conventions in mind into your video game experience.
Yeah, I've been playing Battlegrounds lately, and when you start a match in Battlegrounds, everyone's in this one area and you can hear everyone like just essentially like yelling racial slurs for no reason. Like, it's like it's like real disturbing. So I like just turned off that voice chat, which I tend to do in most games. I tend to turn off off the voice chat for like strangers, because you never know really what you're going to get. But for example, you just I don't think there's any real games where you can turn off the text chat. And like Clay and I have both played Overwatch on PC and console. And when we play on console, it's like fun. Like, I don't know. It's like, we're just hanging out, having fun.
It's a good time.
But when we play on PC, we're like, oh my God, like so flustered, because people will just like yell at you or whatever, like through the text chat. But like,
I'm continuously impressed at the people who like have the patience to type things out on their like controllers on their Xbox. Like, I have a friend who like trash talks people from his PS4 controller, and I'm just like, what's wrong with you? Are you like a little kid? He's like 35 years old, and I'm just like, you have better things to do than waste like 30 seconds typing out like fuck you every time you lose.
I've noticed some games that they're kind of like removing it from the game itself. Like, the chat still exists in the system. But I think Overwatch, at least on Xbox, they don't have like a chat feature in game. Like, the voice chat's there, but I don't think you can like type to anybody, which I think is kind of cool.
No, it helps. It helps a lot, I think, as far as like not enabling negativity unnecessarily.
I think they're trying to keep the game civil and not go down that path. You've got the sprays, you know, put tea time on everybody's face, and everybody knows that you're, you know, trash talking. You don't need to do
healing spam.
Yeah.
I miss the good old days of something like Halo 2, where your only real way to trash talk someone was like to teabag them with your character. And like, that would frustrate people so much.
Yeah, just sit there and have to watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter what the platform, you are not able to avoid teabagging.
I'm sure someone's figured out how to do it in Splatoon too.
Okay, so the keyboard and mouse are still, it's like text input, like that's the point of it. And then the mouse is meant for like a pointer input. Is it not bizarre that there hasn't been more innovation in this? Like, have people tried to push this forward, and in what ways? I'm maybe not familiar with it.
I mean, I would argue that there's like a divergence in innovation for like PCs versus consoles, in the sense that like, yeah, you have stuff like macros or those crazy Logitech keyboards with a second screen that can give you like a heads up display, or even the fact that you can use like completely disparate controllers on one PC. Like, you can control with a joystick as well as you can control with like an Xbox controller, or you could throw in like a DDR pad and use all of those things as an input. Like, I remember I was blown away when I used to be able to play the DDR clone Stepmania and then like switch to a MAME arcade game emulator and then switch to like my N64 emulator, and I can play all of those on one device at the same time.
That's crazy.
Sounds like most of you guys play PC like way more than I do, obviously. Do you use the keyboard like almost always, or do you use gamepads and stuff?
Keyboard and mouse always. I just find it more, I'm like the exact opposite. I find the keyboard and mouse to be way better than the controller in response time, and or like if I'm going to snipe or do anything like that. Mm-hmm. I prefer the mouse, but I do have a very nice gaming mouse. I don't really know if there's major leaps forward in the mouse and keyboard section of PC gaming. It's just a better mouse.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft released that like precision controller a while back. I remember that, but I've never played with that one.
I've used the like pro Xbox controller briefly, and it was like you could just like, they're like magnets, you could pull off like the joystick and put on like a taller joystick or whatever and change the buttons and stuff, and it was like, this is kind of cool, but it's the same thing just with like different feeling buttons, you know. It's like, and it wasn't like that crazy. It's really expensive too for just like a regular Xbox controller. I don't know, I don't get it.
I'm like, I think I feel more comfortable using a game controller with the sticks due to the fact that I've probably played significantly more. I got my first gaming PC last year. And at first I was really overwhelmed with the mouse input because it felt fragile to me. It took a while before I realized that I did prefer it. I think it's like, it's just more fun to be able to like quickly change direction. And once you get addicted to that, when you go back to the like game console controller, you're like, I can't look back and forth fast enough. I can't like check my corners, or I can't do this or that. Yeah, it just makes you play differently essentially. But the one thing that the like controller does so much better than the keyboard and mouse, and I'm surprised that like this is not like a major issue in the world of gaming, but it's like the like movement controls, like the AWSD sort of thing, like that's like on or off. Like, you don't have the subtlety you have with a game controller to like kind of move around. Like, one of my things I just love to do is kind of like when I'm like walking around a corner, sort of like strafe around it halfway, like real smoothly, like on a game controller. Mm-hmm. And I can't do that on like a PC at all.
Like when you pull like both of the handles like to the side and you're mm-hmm. like turning and moving at the same time.
Yeah, cinematic mode.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, does a mouse have feedback too? Like one of the things that I like with my Xbox controller in certain games is the feedback you get, like physical feedback through the vibrations. Depends on the game, but
it's not really standardized on PC, which I think is the big problem.
Yeah.
My mouse does not vibrate. No. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be pretty awesome. But
like when you complete a form on a website, if it's like
that's the best thing about the new iPhones, man. I like the haptics turned off recently for some reason and I had to like restart my phone, but the whole time it turned off I was just like, oh my god, this feels like something is wrong. Like I can't use my phone anymore.
Yeah, like I'm surprised that console controllers don't do more in terms of feedback, honestly. Like it's usually just vibrate. I haven't like had a console controller that does anything else, but it seems like there's some good opportunities to do things with feedback.
Here's my plug for the Nintendo Switch. So there's like two controllers. They sit on the sides of the screen when you have it in handheld mode, and they both have like essentially haptic feedback engines in them. And because it's like, it first off, it's stereo and you can really feel the difference between them, but also they have like much more like they have many different variants of amplitude or something of like how much they vibrate. And you can really get like a lot of more interesting sensations out of it. Pretty cool. Check out the Joy-Cons.
Have people done anything interesting with it in your experience?
I haven't played any games. I think like Zelda did some semi-cool stuff occasionally. I haven't played any games that blew my mind, but I've heard people describe some games that like builds, like when something's getting closer, you can really like tell it's getting closer. There's like the 1-2 Switch game that tries to do some weird stuff, like where you're like trying to move marbles around inside of it, which sounds pretty interesting, but I haven't played it.
I'm always curious how much Zelda can take advantage of like the platform features, because it also works on the Wii U, which is where I played it. And it's like, it doesn't really use the second screen on the Wii U at all because it's not a thing on the Switch. So I wonder if there's like Switch things it's not using because it has to work on the Wii U as well.
Yeah, that'd be interesting because it seems like it's the exact same game from everything I've heard. Yeah. So I don't think they probably did much specific.
Was it Skyward Sword or Twilight Princess where it was like released on both consoles and one was like had a drastically different controller scheme?
It was Twilight Princess.
I remember that was an interesting like discrepancy.
I don't like when they do that and they make a game universal so it can work on multiple pieces. Like I would rather it work on only one and they use all the features and take full advantage of the system instead of reducing it and making the game not work in certain aspects or not have certain abilities or
totally.
Yeah, the way Nintendo makes games is their development process is weird sometimes because sometimes they'll be
game
that's independent of the console.
They could do such a better job if they would just.
Yeah. I totally agree. It confounds me as well.
After Nintendo 64, I like lost faith in Nintendo, and when they came out with like the Wii, I was kind of like, oh, this is gonna be cool, and then I bought it and I immediately regretted it, and it went downhill after that, and I still haven't been able to in my mind recover Nintendo as a worthy purchase. So that's the whole goal of tonight, to get me to buy a Switch.
Well, it's the best Nintendo console since the Nintendo 64. I can say that without any question in my mind.
Sold.
You should get a sponsorship from Nintendo for this podcast.
Better. Charlie will keep convincing me.
I've always been more optimistic about Nintendo than Clay and our other friend Jeff. Like Jeff just like rails on me for like like even considering Nintendo because like they're way behind in so much stuff and they constantly try gimmicky things. And in this case, because we're talking about like input, like they did a gimmicky thing with the game controllers, but it's surprising how much it panned out to be an advantage in this case. Like they made the most like ridiculously cool controllers ever, where I can have like one game console that I'm holding and then suddenly split it out and it's two controllers and they look weird and they don't look like they should work, but you can still play and it's fine. That's like amazing.
Yeah, that's the crazy part. I think that they've always been ahead of the curve when it comes to innovation and people give them like a lot of crap for the gimmicks and shit, but I think that actually works in their favor most of the time because they're trying things that someone like Microsoft or Sony or Sega would never dare to try on a mainstream like console.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like they try a lot of stuff, and sometimes it's terrible, and sometimes it's great, but they're still, like, going to try it. Like, the Wii, I remember seeing, like, the Wii controller, and I was like, why are the buttons real stupid? Or, like, I didn't like the N64 controller that much. It's like, how do you hold this? Like, I know you can just get used to it, but what? But then, like, you look at Xbox or PlayStation, it's, like, the same forever. So, I don't know. It's cool. I'm glad they hit it, finally, with the Switch.
Yeah. Can we make a quick straw poll? What's your favorite console controller? Because I'm just going to say N64 will always win.
Wow. Coming out bold.
Xbox 360.
Yeah, I gotta go with Xbox.
N64.
If I had one more hand, I'd be into it.
It was the craziest controller, and it was the first controller that had, like, vibration piece that you, like, slugged in like a freaking gun.
Yeah.
And you were just like, and you were playing Star Fox, and you were kind of, like, blown away because of the amount of vibrations. You were, like, freaking out.
I still wish that they would have made, like, the GoldenEye setting where you could pop out the memory pack to reload your gun.
That would have been really cool.
Okay. I'm really having trouble coming to a conclusion here. I kind of liked the boxy Nintendo 8-bit controller with, like, just the buttons on that thing felt still amazing to this day for some reason. I don't know why. The thing was ergonomically not good, but there was something about the buttons that just, it's probably just nostalgia.
Yeah.
I think the next two are, like, the real contenders, and it's either Xbox 360 controller or the Nintendo Switch Pro controller. They're basically, like, the same controller. Probably the 360 gets it. It just felt really good.
I was always impressed how similar the 360 controller looked to the original Xbox controller, but how, like, much better it felt by just, like, tiny little tweaks. Mm-hmm. That was always, like, a, you know, I can't imagine how much, like, time they spent designing, like, that tiny amount of change, but it was, like, really felt good.
I was on Xbox 360 for last gen, and then I moved to PlayStation 4 for this generation, and I was so excited about the PlayStation 4 controller because I was like, it's symmetrical. Like, I'm into that, right? Like, that seems like such a good thing. But I will say that the thing that bothers me about the PlayStation 4 controller is just the amount of pressure necessary to press in the control sticks, which you have to do a lot in certain games because it's generally like a running sort of maneuver. That really wears out your hands.
I would agree. The original like PlayStation 2 controller didn't have as much of a pushdown needed.
Mm-hmm.
The PlayStation 4 it's a very good controller, don't get me wrong. It's just that there are some times where the R1 and the R2 like buttons, I think they're too close together.
Mm-hmm.
If my hands are pushing all the buttons, it just takes a second to go back and forth.
That's always been my biggest complaint with PlayStation, was the back buttons felt the same, and then on Xbox it's like a button and a trigger, so it's, like, real easy to feel the difference.
Yeah, I get lost sometimes when I'm playing Overwatch and I'm like, R2? Shit, no, I was R1.
So another major difference between PCs and consoles is the output. PCs are often connected to a monitor, probably in some sort of, like, desk-like situation, and consoles are generally connected to a TV where you're probably sitting further away from the display and you're probably sitting in a different physical position. So my question is, number one, how do those, like, gaming positions, like, affect the gameplay and, like, your engagement and, like, your attitude? And okay, yeah, let's just start there.
I get real fidgety. Like, I need to get up and move around, or I just, like, get super stressed out if I'm playing the game. Mm-hmm. So in general, I like console better for that, because I don't want to be sitting, like, a foot away from the monitor with my face in the monitor, just in an uncomfortable position.
I'm exactly the same. This is why, like, across the board, I've been more into console, because it's like, that seems like entertainment / relaxation to me. I sit at a desk all day in front of a computer, so gaming in front of a computer seems like pretty problematic to me, because I don't feel like it would be, like, as enjoyable. So in fact, in my case, I have my PC hooked up to my TV.
I kind of come down to, like, two conclusions about this. I think, you know, like, as a kid, it was really easy to just be hunched over my desk for, like, hours at a time and get lost in games. And that was mostly because I didn't have any other space that was mine to really do that. And the flip side of that is that having, like, your console typically in something like a living room makes it inherently kind of social. If I was playing, like, N64 and my little sister wanted to come over and, like, watch her movie, then we would have to compromise, like, who's going to play the game, who's going to watch the movie. And, you know, sometimes that meant, like, she'd play a game with me, but more often than not, it meant, like, oh, I have to stop playing the video game at some point, or something else. Like, I have to get up and go do my homework now. So I think having your console in like a living room or a shared room just makes it social by default. And that makes it more open to things like multiplayer experiences or just like having someone watch you while you play. And I think if you know, your computer is usually like at your desk or in your room or somewhere private. And that makes it so that you can just like waste away by yourself with your computer.
I think this is a really like interesting topic too. Like if you think about it from the design side of things, because like I work pretty much like primarily in mobile. So I'm never really worried about like the proximity of the like user's screen to their face. But if you think about like a console and their TV and like the position in which you're playing, like you don't really know where they're going to be. So you have right. no idea like how far away they are from the TV or how close they are to it, which makes for some like really interesting like visibility issues that can come up, like things like font sizes and stuff like that. But it's just one of those things like I would never think about that. And as like a UX person, like I'd love to know like my user's environment. So I'd be really interested to know how somebody from like Xbox like conducts research on the way like people play and like the position that they have when they're like sitting away from the console. That'd be like super cool to hear that.
Charlie, you talked about that in one of the articles you wrote recently.
It's the Mass Effect one, yeah. I think. Yeah, like it was like it's like they didn't pay attention to that at all.
That was like that seems so frustrating.
I didn't pay attention to what?
One real tactically like font size. Like the game was pretty much like there were lots of things in the game that were illegible from across the room on a couch. It felt like they had designed a PC game and then put it on a TV.
I see. Okay.
And also running the game in 1080, the font size like created like a rendered the font in a way that made it more illegible. And I bet like in 4K, it might have been more legible. But like it was just like they didn't take into account like all of the possible ways people would play this game.
That not everybody has a 4K TV. And right. That,
or like, not everyone's playing the game in the ideal situation, right? Like people have like, true. It's crazy to think about like the variation in size of TVs. Like occasionally you'll still see someone with like a 3x4 monitor or something like that too. And like you can play games on those monitors. Like it's crazy. Like they do actually still work that way, I'm pretty sure.
I have two monitors that I'm currently using right now, 24-inch monitors set up right next to each other. And I play my PlayStation on one and my computer is on the other. And then I can dual screen my gaming computer on both screens and go from there. But no, I'm definitely in a aggressive gaming chair isolated in my office with my gaming headset on and I'm totally zoned in.
You literally like, have the opposite situation because you have both.
I am the opposite of everybody here, I think. Because I'm when I'm gaming, I am not relaxed. I am on edge. I am freaking out.
I do think like there is like a performance thing too. Cause like I sit on the couch or I sit on the floor sometimes and I'm just like trying to be as lazy as possible. And yeah, I think it makes me like a sloppier player. Like
I would agree. Like if I'm lounging, no, not you. If I'm lounging, then I'm not taking it seriously. I'm going to make sloppy mistakes. And if I'm in the mode and ready to go, I feel like I play better.
Charlie, were me and you joking online about the like responsive gaming interface thing where it would be yeah. like really cool if the proximity of the controller to the console like dictated the size of like the UI components. So if you were like really far away, like your menu would be bigger or something like that. I don't know.
I think that's genius.
That'd be super interesting.
I find like because I do have my PC hooked up to the TV, like across the board, the PC UIs don't work across the room. So I either have to like move into some sort of weird state where I'm sitting in the middle of the room on the floor or something like that. Or sometimes I increase like the resolution or I decrease the resolution so that I can have it like blown up a little bit. But yeah, across the board, it's interesting because you just that is like a random parameter when you're designing and you really wouldn't know like how to approach it. But it would be awesome if there was a feedback mechanism that you could tie into it that like would make it right for most people.
Yeah.
I feel like as a designer, that would be a nightmare to deal yeah. with, especially like, you know, if you're designing like iPhone software, like accessibility and like crazy font sizes is like a thing you deal with. But I feel like as a game designer, that's nothing you would like ever consider. You know, you just like pick a font and like UI is an afterthought, you know, like the game is the thing you're thinking about.
It's the primary. Yeah.
I was talking about this with Charlie the other day. Like, I think that's a completely missed opportunity. Like, it blows my mind. Lots of things seem to blow my mind tonight, but it blows my mind that that like the UX and UI of video games is overlooked as secondary to the game itself, because the game itself is an interface between like you and some crazy idea this developer has or the game studio has. And every piece of that in my mind is interconnected. And the fact that, you know, they'll say like the font doesn't matter or how you see it doesn't matter, like all of that matters because it completely changes the experience of your game. Like, if you can't read what the UI says in Mass Effect, you're going to put down the game and stop playing it.
Yep.
I think if all the software in the 3DS and the Wii U wasn't like the worst thing I've ever used, I would already own a Switch. But everything I've ever done on the Nintendo stuff is so frustrating. I think you're absolutely right. Like, if all that just like was amazing, like the games, then I would be much more into like the whole ecosystem and not just like I'll play Zelda, but everything else, like, no thanks.
Yeah. Wii U was actually really interesting in this way because they had, you know, certain times the UI that would be displayed on your little controller screen would be like up on the TV, or you could like reverse them in certain cases, right? And they were like grossly disproportioned in those circumstances. Like, the Switch still does this a little bit in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, because there's like an OK button, which is clearly like it's meant to start the race or whatever, but it's like it's clearly meant for touch and it's huge, but when you see it on the screen, it takes up like 45% of the screen on your TV, and you're like, all right, I'll go with that.
That's actually an interesting point. So do you get the exact same UI on your Switch, whether or not it's on your TV or in mobile mode?
Yes, exactly the same.
That's weird. I would have thought that they would have thought that through, because they very explicitly gave you two separate use cases.
Well, the weird thing is they sort of succeeded with the Switch, where the proportions that they chose do work. They look a little overscaled on the TV across the board, but it's like a big bulky interface. Not bulky, but it's like a big like cartoonishy like buttony interface and stuff. So it just kind of works.
Yeah.
But on mobile, it's kind of like it just feels more like the distance that you hold it is about the same as like when I look up at the TV, like how big the TV looks in my vision, like it at distance. It's kind of interesting that it does work across the board, but I'm sure certain games are going to totally screw this up because they're going to like, you know, develop for one or the other, and then it'll feel really wrong. But as far as the UI in general, they kind of like balanced it enough where it's not weird.
I just imagine someone in a meeting like, oh, look, like hold it in front of your face, look at the screen. It's good enough. Like, okay, we just won't like think about this at all. Like, it's fine. We'll just move on.
Next time. That's what I felt like with the Wii U. I felt there were moments with that interface where it was just like, yeah, this is like no one thought about this. It's
why it didn't do so good.
Another thing that I think is a difference between these platform or these two types of platforms is I'll call it single tasking versus multitasking. So like with a PC, you could be playing a game, you could have a second screen, you could have a bunch of shit open, you could be streaming on Twitch, you could be like chatting with people, you could be doing all sorts of different stuff like while you're playing a game. Consoles across the board do one thing at a time.
I think it's a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, like, yeah, on a console, almost across the board, people will have their full attention given to one game, which means that, like, everyone is doing the same thing that you are. But on a PC, it means that people are less focused and have their attention scattered. So, like I was mentioning earlier, I used to play that FPS, and we'd have, like, Ventrilo and TeamSpeak and, like, a guild chat. And maybe I was like talking to my friends at school online and like checking my email or something or doing my homework. And it just made it so that like everyone on a PC playing one game had a drastically different experience. And you could never really predict what people were doing or like if they were paying attention to you or if they're just off in another room entirely.
I kind of prefer the console experience when it comes to single tasking because everybody's focused on playing the game.
Yeah.
I have had several bad experiences with some of my best friends where they would be on PC, but one of them is browsing 4chan or Reddit and is not even in the game. And I'm like, God, this is like, how are we supposed to do anything when you're not even in the game? And I can't, you know, obviously you can't control that. So we move to PlayStation and we're focused on gaming. Like we might have some music in the background, but you're there just to play games. You're not there to do anything else because it won't really allow you to do more than one task, which I kind of like.
Yeah, like when I'm playing Overwatch or something on PC, sometimes the loading will take a long time and I'll be like, maybe I'll check Facebook or something. And then it's like, it's just like, I get it. I know why I'm doing it, because I'm just trying to have fun and this is a casual time and like I'm moving around and doing stuff. But I think it is a little less relaxing actually than the console like single tasking world, because I like maybe I'll check my phone or something a little bit between games, but like across the board, I'm just like giving up a little bit of my anxiety to just be like, I'm gonna play this game. And this is the thing I'm doing. The one thing I was like always missing out of like console gaming that I could get on PC is like, yeah, playing like a soundtrack of the music I want to listen to in the background. But like PlayStation 4 nailed it with the Spotify integration last year. So I'm set now.
On console, I'd like to see multitasking like done better on a small level. Like I'd like for like easy ways to like share screenshots or like short video clips that I of like my in-game footage. I think that'd be really cool. I haven't really seen that happen on console yet, and I wouldn't want it to like distract, to like take me away from the experience of playing the game, but it would be really nice to just like tweet out a screenshot from like something cool that happened in the game, and there's just like no way to do it.
Totally agree. I've definitely taken a lot of photos of my TV from my couch on my phone, which looks terrible, but it's like there's no other good way to do this. But I want to share it like right now. You know, I just like finished whatever thing and wanted to tell my friends.
Yeah, and you gotta like hold your iPhone like just at the right angle, or it looks like totally skewed. Totally. Yeah, it looks totally shitty.
PlayStation's almost got it, I think, with the, but it still takes you out of the game and brings you to another screen, so you're already lost. Like you can't, it needs to be just instant and it doesn't take you away from anything, and then you can send it whenever you want, but it's not perfect yet.
I imagine like there's like a photo button on the DJI Mavic controller, which is like kind of console-y feeling, which is like I kind of like, but there's like a weird like screenshot button like on the in a weird like upper spot, and I was like, that would be cool if that was just like a weird like next to like the Xbox pair button, there's like a screenshot button you can like push it and, you know, deal with it later. I think that'd be awesome.
Not to fanboy out on the Switch more, but I will. They just like crushed it with the like sharing on the Switch, or like the lightweight sort of like screen captures and stuff. It doesn't do like video captures, I don't think, but you just like there's like a dedicated screenshot button. It's like a single press. It's not like a hold or anything like that. You just tap it at any time and it's like, boom, you just collect them in your album and it's very easy. And when you go to them, it's just like a normal sort of share flow, but they really got it right, 'cause it's just super fast. And that's the thing you need. You don't want to be like thinking about it. In PlayStation, you tap it and it like brings up the side menu.
Yeah. It kills the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Xbox is the same too. And like, I don't understand the like system status in Xbox. When I take a screenshot, it says it uploads it to like OneDrive or something, but I have no idea where that is. I keep uploading things to OneDrive and it's like I'm just blasting it out into like a black hole of nothingness. Like I have no idea where those screenshots are going.
When will Microsoft learn that we don't want to use any of their services?
Some PM on OneDrive, like, look, people are using it, and I was like, yeah, not on purpose, but
they're using it by mistake. You put it in there, we don't really know what we're doing.
Yeah, they're like, people love screenshots on OneDrive. Like, they're like, are they ever sharing them? Don't worry about that. They're putting them there.
They're being uploaded. That's all that matters.
Anecdotally, I can say that I've seen hella Switch screenshots on like Facebook and Twitter, like shared directly from the Switch, which I find pretty impressive.
I feel like I saw a ton of Zelda screenshots like right when it came out from all the Switch people. I mean, I haven't really seen anything since then, but it was like, look how pretty this is, and like I got my shrines, and then it was kind of tapered off. But I don't know, I feel like I've seen more Switch screenshots on Twitter than any other platform.
Well, they've direct connected it for Switch, right?
Yeah, basically you can log in with like a Twitter account and a Facebook account. And what I do is actually I set up my Facebook account to be like an only me privacy setting. So I actually like share a ton of them to myself on Facebook, but that's how I get them. So I can like do anything I want with them. Like if I want to message them to somebody or something, because otherwise you're taking out like an SD card and like putting it at a computer. And that's like just a bad flow. That is one thing that I think all of these things could do better, is like sharing to like Twitter or Facebook or some sort of broadcast platform is really not the way I often want to share like these moments, both on PC and console. Like I really want to like tell a few people like, oh, look, this thing happened, who are like, I know are interested in it, you know? And like, no one has a solution for that at all.
Yeah.
Nope.
Not until Apple releases a console.
They did already. It's called the iPhone.
Apple TV.
That is a perfect segue to the next section, which is mobile. Like, we've been talking throughout about, like, you know, mobile moments in this, but PC and console are, these are like home experiences. These are like protected environments. At this point in the game, like, mobile is the third contender for like the way people play games. And in a lot of cases, maybe the most popular. This is totally half-baked, but like, I was thinking about like the phone being more akin to the mobile computer, and then like things like mobile consoles, like the Switch or something like that, being like a different experience, because the phone still has your connectivity. You can still check your email on it. You can do like all this stuff on it, but these dedicated consoles that are mobile are actually still different because they pretty much focus on just playing games.
I think it's largely a difference in like how the games are being developed, because at this point you see something like the Switch basically has like the same hardware as a tablet. Like, the hardware is converging, and yet people are like developing completely separate experiences. And I think people still don't think that quote unquote real games should exist on mobile, and they're like shying away from that. And if Nintendo just released like a real Pokemon game on the iPhone, or a real Zelda game, or like, you know, they're starting to with things like Fire Emblem, and it's really popular, they would realize that like people would be willing to play those games on their phone just as much if they were designed specifically for that device. So I think this whole like real game versus mobile game, or console game versus mobile game, is completely imaginary at this point. There's nothing in the way of those two things becoming one.
I wonder if part of it is your, or like the consumer like perception of what software should cost. Like, I'm totally willing to pay $60 for whatever video game, but like $60 for some like iPhone app, and it's like, holy crap, never, you know?
But I think that also like takes someone changing that expectation. Like, if someone made, you know, Knights of the Old Republic 3 on the iPhone, like I said, I would pay like $20 or $30 or $40 if it was the full game, but I wouldn't pay for like Geometry Wars, which is like going to be like an 8-hour experience or something, or like something on that level where it's not a full game experience. And I think that's where the disconnect is. Like, people want to pay for a full experience. They're willing to, at least.
I think it's like tech people us willing to pay $30 for an iPhone game. That's like a great game is realistic. But I think just having been on the App Store a long time, seeing people like lose their mind over 99 cents, it's hard to imagine like normal people paying $30 for an iPhone app ever. I don't know.
But again, that's still like a convention of the past 10 years. Like, if Nintendo came along and charged you $20 for a Zelda game, and then changed that to $30 the next year, then $40, like, we'd all get used to that really quickly, and no one would be complaining anymore.
I think you're right. If some big publisher did it, it could work. But it'd have to be like something very established, and not some indie person.
Exactly. There needs to be like some killer app that convinces the mainstream.
There's like two things I think that prevent the mobile phones from taking away the power of mobile consoles. One is storage, in a way. Like, like if you want like a $60 game, that's like probably a couple gigs worth of hardcore information that has been put together across the board. And I think mobile storage is still like a limitation for a lot of people. They'd be like concerned about that, or the speed at which they download it. Even though it happens, like the Switch is the exact same thing. Like, you download a couple gig game, no big deal. But on your phone, which you use for all this other stuff, you might be more concerned about things like storage.
Which is funny, because that's really similar to how PCs were originally, when you'd like download a game to your PC. And I remember I could have like a handful of games actually on my hard drive, and the rest like I had to keep on CDs, and I would like burn ISOs to DVDs because I didn't have enough storage to play them all. Mm-hmm. And I was always fascinated when there were all those services that were like streaming games over the internet, and like it was being rendered on hardware not at your house but at a server somewhere, and you were just getting like a video feed of your input. I was always surprised that that never took off, because that seemed like the perfect change in the way games should be played in like our time right now.
Mm-hmm. I know Apple added stuff a few years ago for iOS. I don't know if you want to get like too into Apple things, but
oh, I wanna.
Okay. You can do on-demand assets, so you can like build all your app with like all the stuff and tag certain things as like, you know, level 3 or whatever. And then when you download it from the App Store, you can have it automatically remove all of those assets. And then as a developer, you can say like, give me this tag, I'm gonna use it in a minute. And it can start like, the system can manage all this for you. And like, if you run out of space, like delete some stuff and like get it back. And you just tell the system like, I want to use all of the assets tagged, like whatever set of tags you have. So I feel like this is a solved thing. It's just like hard to write software this way because you have to be very like, you know, handle all the cases and like, well, they don't have internet and I need this thing, but they don't have it yet. So you gotta like show a thing. Like, it's just annoying, but I think you're definitely right. Like a lot of people run out of space due to photos, but I feel like a lot of this is like getting better as phones have more storage and like people use iCloud and or Google Photos or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. And then problem number two is just the hardware input, right? Like the Vita or the Switch or whatever has the control sticks. It has dedicated hardware buttons, and mobile phones don't have these things. And there's ways around it. I've seen like these things that you can like, you know, put on your phone to kind of have a similar setup, but they don't come with it by default. I think that holds people back as well.
I think if you could buy those from Apple or Google or whoever like makes your phone, it would be a different thing than like, here's all these third-party ones. You don't know which ones are good. And like most games don't support them, but just imagine if like Apple made one, I think it would like really take off because there's like one like official one everyone can kind of get around. I don't know.
I would agree. I think if there's like a reference design that was like a first-party reference design, then like something like the Switch would automatically have hundreds of millions of competitors like already out in the wild.
And why haven't they thought of that? Why haven't Apple like jumped on that and been like, hey, this phone's here. I could have a device that would hook up to it and be almost like the Switch where it would just give me an extension controller and you could just go at it.
Maybe we should all go try to apply as a team to work on Apple.
You're
Apple,
totally right.
If you're listening, we're here. We can help you.
Yes, let's get us on board.
You're totally right, though. Like the best iPad has way better hardware and like you can stream to the TV. Like all the components are there. They just need like some buttons and we're good to go.
That's please, really Apple. It.
Yeah, and I think like you're right. Like having it be at like the hardware manufacturer of the platform level. Like if Apple says these are the controls that people can buy, it's so much easier for developers to know like, yeah, if we invest a bunch of time into this, like people have one thing that they need to play our game like really well.
I have a weird technical tangent, but I know Steam or Valve recently did something with Steam where they gave like these APIs to all the different classes of controller inputs, like whether you're using an Xbox type controller or like a PlayStation type controller or whatever on your PC. And they basically, one of you guys can correct me if you know more, but they basically created like a higher level set of APIs that you can reference to say like, you know, press the X button or whatever is similar to the X button on your controller, press the A button or whatever is similar to the A button on your controller. And then developers didn't need to actually like code for each individual controller type. They could just code for the interaction they wanted, and Steam would automatically like use the API to propagate what controller you had based on what you had plugged in and what button that mapped to.
That's cool.
And, like, that to me is a really cool ideal version of that. Like there's going to be millions of types of controllers. So instead of supporting all of them or just one, let's have a way for all of those things to communicate with each other.
I've used their VR SDK a bit, and they do the similar thing where it's like you can use any VR to like control the Steam VR game, and they just kind of deal with all of the things. And as a developer, you just kind of, you don't have to think about any of that. It's just like, you know, make it for once for Steam and it works everywhere, which is pretty awesome. Awesome.
As far as like controllers go, I think that like one thing mobile does have going for it, like regardless of the controllers, is that like mobile does a better job of like mapping the system and the interactions in the system to the real world. Mm-hmm. So like if you take a game like Hearthstone, for example, like that game is so much more satisfying on an iPad just based on like the interactions that you do to like physically place the cards down onto the table.
Yeah.
Where like I don't even want like a mouse. Like I don't even want to play that game with a mouse. So I feel like there's games like that where like a big publisher like Blizzard, they could have released that like just solely on mobile. And I think it would have been just as successful. I mean, at least from like a usability standpoint, or like even more successful, because that game is just so satisfying on mobile compared to like if you play it on like a laptop or something.
Yeah, we have to be like getting out of the age now where like people are like all the big developers are dabbling in mobile, right? Like we have to be like, it's pretty clear, like this is like, if you want people who, if you want a lot of people to have a device that'll play your software, that's done, right? Like mobile is the platform that the most people are on. You don't have 50 million people with your console. You have a billion people with an Android phone, right? Like, yeah, it's ready to go. developers.
Why do you think the publishers don't do that? You know, they target a particular console.
I think, yeah, you said it before, price point, major issue. You can't sell these like big games for a lot of money. The Mario game, Mario Run, I didn't play it, but it seemed like it was a full game. Like it was a real game. They had to charge like $9.99 for it. And still people were pretty tentative about that. So I think there's like a huge amount of work that actually needs to be done for the prices to go up to the level that it's profitable for them to make the density of game, or the complete type of game that they would really want to make, that will then make people want to play on mobile as much as they would wish they would.
Yeah, like I wonder if those like publishers, like what their considerations are when they think about like the business model of it, if it's like free to play with, you know, in-app purchases or how that works. I mean, I see that way more on mobile than I do on like console, but...
Is that common on PC? I don't think I've ever seen it on console, like a continuing to pay to like buy tokens or whatever nonsense.
Yeah, no, I haven't either. I don't know. It just seems to be the model for mobile games.
I know I have a few friends that used to work on like really big name mobile games that were always like in the top 10 paid on iPhone, and they were doing insanely well like revenue wise but it was kind of like, well, they had a model that worked and they just kind of reskin it and put the same like mechanics out, you know, over and over with like, you know, we have like knights and gangs and mm-hmm. you know, whatever,
just rebrand thing.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it's not necessarily mobile, but like that specific model, and it happened to be on mobile. I don't know, because they're all the same, right?
Yeah,
it's like the engagement mechanism of the most popular mobile games is often about time. It wants you to keep coming back, right? Like it doesn't take time as a like a for sure. It's like trying to get you back. So it uses notifications to keep you back in the game. It says you have to be doing stuff. You have to keep checking back. And by the way, you should like spend a bunch of money to like reduce the amount of time that it takes for the next thing to happen. Games on console or PC believe they have your dedicated attention. So the engagement mechanisms are like not exactly about time. It's about like accumulation, right? Like you need to get more armor so you can do this thing.
Most of those games, like the really big, like top 10 paid games or whatever, you're usually in-app purchasing to like either level up something really fast, or to like, you have to wait 8 hours, or you can pay right now. And that's kind of addictive to like keep paying to like you speed everything up and like, look how awesome I am now, I'm moving fast. That's never been a thing. But I think if I could have ever like, I'll pay $10 to like have sweet guns in Halo all the time, I would have absolutely done that. It's just never an option on, you know, other consoles or systems or whatever.
Yeah.
And like I've heard from like people at Bungie, like that's a game that's like, oh yeah, you could pay the 10 extra bucks and like get the Gjallarhorn straight up right from the beginning type of thing. They are completely against that idea because they know that like a gaming community of like hardcore gamers would just hate it, right? Like it is like... It's because a lot of those games are competitive, like people versus people, giving the advantage to those with more money to spend is just like bad news for the game being like a success.
I hate pay to win. I think it's terrible and it ruins the gaming experience, because then you don't have to do anything. You don't have to be good. You don't have to grind or even try. You can just, I got money to spend. I'll drop $30. I get all the gear. I get all the levels.
I guess it's kind of like the real world.
It's like, yeah.
Capitalism.
It's a good comparison. But I don't like it. Like, I think it's a version of cheating, but at the same time, you didn't really do anything.
Well, I think the reason it works in all of those like crazy iPhone games is they're all really casual, and there's no like,
I agree with that.
It doesn't matter like that I'm paying to beat you, because like, you know, we never interact. It's all these like automated offline battles. But I think you're right. If it was like I could pay in Halo to always win, that would be terrible, because like I can afford that, but some 12-year-old can't, and now we'll always beat them. And that sucks for them, you know?
Yeah.
And Charlie, to your point about like mobile games and how like addictive they are, and you know, the conventions, how they're different for paying for something. I think Nintendo is actually starting to do that on the Switch, it looks like, with the whole like season pass they're offering for Breath of the Wild, where you can buy the game for $50, but then there's like basically DLC that comes out over a period of months. Like I think there's two separate DLCs coming out, and like you can pay to buy them ahead of time, and it's basically like in-app purchases but for an entire console game, which like unlocks a whole new part of the game.
Does that bother you, Clay, if you're by yourself, if you're paying to like be awesome in like a single player game?
Well, it depends on, I guess, the game. So like if I'm paying for a season pass, I don't consider that like pay to win. I consider that I want to get the expansions as soon as they come out. If it's like, I don't know, Hearthstone, where I'm paying for, I can drop money and get more cards or get, you know, those are random, you know what I mean? So it's mm-hmm. it's a little bit different. I think Blizzard's done a different style where if you pay, you can have a chance to get more cards or more loot boxes, and it would be helpful.
Hearthstone is like interesting to me because I don't consider it pay to win. I consider it like pay to play. When I jumped into that game, a lot of other people I was like playing with had been playing for a while, and they were like, they had cards and I could not compete with them with mm-hmm. like the intro
set. Yeah, that's true. You can't. Yeah.
That game, like, literally I felt required me to buy cards in order to compete and play, or maybe like an enormous amount of time, which I wasn't prepared to invest in it. But yeah, it was like, I started, I learned how to play, I went through the intro stuff. And then as soon as I started playing other people, I was like, whoa, I can't compete at all. Even if I like do what I think is like a good job.
It's gotten so much worse too, since they like started rotating cards now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's rough, man. It's rough to get back into that game.
Okay, I got the final topic before we sort of wrap this up. But the final topic I want to talk about is cost. So across the board throughout history, consoles have been like in this range of like somewhere like $150 to like $500 or something like that. Like almost throughout all generations, they've like costed this much. PCs, on the other hand, are generally much more expensive to like get invested in. They have like a bunch of additional utility and stuff like that. And the sky's the limit. You can build them out in any way that you really want. But how does cost affect your decisions between these two types of systems?
I had a really enlightening experience about this yesterday. I was at the Giants game with one of my friends and telling him that I was going to be talking about like PC versus console games. And he's traditionally like a really heavy PC gamer. So I thought that he would be more sympathetic to other PC gamers. But he was like, actually, you know, the fact that you can build out these monstrous desktop computers and just like spend endless money getting better graphics cards and better mice and keyboards and better gear makes it so that the more money you have, the more able you are to play better. Mm-hmm. And I never really thought about that because I've always thought mm-hmm. that consoles are a good equalizer, just because everyone has the same system playing in a similar environment. And I've always had shitty PCs, but he's kind of right. Like if you have a shit ton of money, it completely changes who you are and how you play and even like how you behave towards other people. There's definitely this like within the whole PC master race, this whole belief of like, if you have the newest and best graphics card, like you're a better gamer. And if you have the shittier graphics cards, well, like, that sucks to be you. But it also, like, looks bad on your part. And I find that really weird.
To me, the endlessness of it is a real, like, downside.
Yeah.
Like, growing up, I'd always, like, you know, like, I built a PC and spent all this, like, time and research, you know, as, like, a high schooler, like, save up and buy all these parts and, like, take forever to get them one by one. And then, like, oh, it's not compatible with some game. And it's like, ugh, if I had just, like, bought a PlayStation, I could be playing any game I want right now because it all just work. So.
Exactly.
I don't know. I kind of hate the endlessness of it. I think now it's less of a thing, especially, like, PC Parts Picker. Oh, my gosh. That's, like.
It saved my life.
Oh, night and day from, like, when I did it in high school. And now, like, you just buy sweet stuff and it all, like, generally works, like, thanks to Steam. But, man, that used to be, like, the worst part of it for me. I still love I can just, like, download a game on Xbox and know I can play it to its full ability and I'll be equal to everyone else. And now when I'm getting killed by everyone I know, it's just because I suck and not because I have a terrible PC.
Yeah, that's the part that was shitty. Like, I had the same experience growing up where I would have, like, you know, some graphics card that was inexplicably incompatible with a game that I just spent, like, $50 on. And there's, like, no way of knowing when those weird idiosyncrasies will like will crop up, or like whether or not you need a patch for your video game to even play it on your computer, or maybe like Windows needs to be updated, and all of that is just so ridiculous to me. I've always despised it.
Or even recently, like I write iPhone software for a living, so I have Macs until just very recently. I just got a PC, but I was really excited about No Man's Sky. I saw the stuff about it. I mean, it was kind of a letdown, but unrelated. Like I was like, this is gonna be so great, and I had integrated graphics on my MacBook and like just couldn't play it. And I was like, man, I just spent like $60 in this thing, and I was so excited. I spent all this time installing Windows on my boot camp, and like what a letdown of like, you know, hours and hours like doing all this stuff and downloading things and installing, and just like now I can't play it, and I wasted all this money. Like, it's just, like, impossible on a console, and I kind of like that. I don't know.
On a really similar note, I don't know if you heard the story about this guy who was just, like, so on the No Man's Sky hype train that he, like, spent $200 on the most deluxe box set you could get before it came out. And then he realized like his computer wouldn't be good enough. So he went and bought like a brand new computer. And then he started playing No Man's Sky and he just got like so much more excited that he bought like this like custom 4K monitor and just like a completely spec'd out computer. Ended up spending $4,000 just to play No Man's Sky.
That's
only
stupid.
To realize 1 month later that he hated the game. Like never depressing. Owned a PC before.
This is the guy that did it to take the screenshots, right? Like he wanted to take the super like high res yeah. screenshots.
I think that's it, yeah.
I read that one.
It's like, oh, this is silly.
Sad and lonely. I don't want to play this anymore.
But back to your point, like, yeah, if you just have like a PS4, that's like $300. You can play any game.
Yeah.
And it always
reliably.
Reliably, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I think, I don't know. What one? PCs or consoles?
I guess it depends on what you're playing and what you're used to.
So. Yeah, I agree.
I think the people that have been like had good PCs growing up and like continuing are still into PCs, and the people that had crappy PCs are kind of more into consoles, which at least that's where I fall. I don't know. Do we all sort of agree with that?
Yeah,
I agree with that. I think it's also just like a personal philosophy thing too. I mean, like if I had a desktop right now, I would be playing desktop games. But I think a lot of us have had a similar notion where it's just like consoles are reliable. You like know exactly what to expect and what you're going to get. And like, it's all relatively the same no matter who's playing on what console. And I think that's a big part of it. I think most people don't want the overhead of like having to upgrade hardware or blah, blah, blah. And for some people, like, that's great. That's the fun in it. But for me, that's never been the case.
Yeah. I think they both have their position in the world right now. Yeah. Like they are different enough still that they, have value to each one. Like whereas, in cars or something like that, you have manual transmissions and automatic transmissions. Let's say automatic is sort of like, you know, console or mobile console per se even or something, where manual is like driving the car. You have to like change the gears. That's like PC for sure. In the world of cars, like most cars are now automatic because that just works for generally, but there's still like always going to, well, for a while still be like that niche of people who are like, I really want to drive the car. I want to do all this stuff and deal with like potentially missing gears and stuff like that. But for me, I get like more whatever out of it. I think like it's going to be that way for a long time. I don't think anything's going away.
Yeah, I agree.
Same.
We nailed it.
Nice.
Go Charlie.
We solidified this argument, whatever the argument was. But yeah, thank you all for hanging out and talking about this stuff. And does anyone have any closing comments they got to squeeze in there?
Next time we should play this, we should record this while we're all playing video games.
Oh, I like that.
Yes, we have to find cool. a video game.
And then Twitch stream really... all of our games.
Just yes.
And then compete our Twitch streams so we can get extra followers.
Streaming rage.
Yes, I want to see that.
Yeah.
It's quite intense.
Yeah, I want to see Clay have a panic attack online.
You actually don't. I've seen it many, many, many times. Thanks for listening to this episode of Games UX. You can follow along on Twitter at games_UX or subscribe via your favorite podcasting app. If you like the show, share it with a friend. Thanks a lot. Cheers.